Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
Going on, Junkie Nation, Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Thursday, except we're coming to you live. What am I saying? Not live, but we're coming to you on a Wednesday. See, I still haven't even gotten the Wednesday night, Sunday night intro. We are doing this to just get the jump for our UK and Oceania audiences. The Eastern time zone is kind of probably sleeping now. Pacific time zone might get lucky if you're a night owl, but yeah, we're just trying to get a little bit of a jump until we get back to also simultaneously broadcasting video. On today's show, we're going to cover a lot of news, like the salaries from the event featuring Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley on Showtime, that pay-per-view. Conor McGregor at it again. Guess who? I mean, there's only a few names that he traded barbs with. This time it was Nate Diaz on Twitter, but it was a good one. We'll talk about it, and then we'll vote on who got the best. An extreme couture fighter passed away recently, and we are definitely sad about that. We'd like to chat a little bit about that and also promote the GoFundMe that's available to his name is Kyle Reyes, to his family, especially his little daughter who we used to see a lot at Extreme Couture. So there's lots to cover. Look, there's some fights this weekend, and I'm not even sure we put that official bow on last weekend's fight. We're going to be jumping around. It's going to be fun. Hang with us for the next 60 minutes. Time to make Junkie Radio on a Wednesday night, September 1st. Goes, you want to start with Jake Paul and get him out of the way? Or you want to save it a little bit? Are we just shoving this stuff down the listeners' throats? What do you hear out there?
You know what? Seeing as everybody wanted to murder me this week, myself and Nolan, let's keep up with the Jake Paul. Take that.
Why did they want to murder you?
It was kind of an inside joke, but you know when they do the Twitter things, the little pieces on spinning back click when they divide them up?
Yes.
Well, on Monday, when our boss had gone through them, he said, I'm basically going to feed you and Nolan to the wolves, because our whole take was whether or not there's room in the sport for Jake Paul and his antics and all that. But me and Nolan were on the side of, yeah, we think there is room for it. So anytime we do anything Jake Paul, people go nuts because they say, it's not MMA, you're MMA junkie. But I mean, obviously, you see everything it creates and the buzz, like we can't stay away from it. We can't just pretend that it didn't happen. So we knew we were going to get torched. It wasn't as bad, but it was pretty funny.
To be specific, did you and Nolan mean there's room for him in MMA or there's room for him on MMA Junkie?
So with everything an MMA fan has to take in, PFL, Bellator, ONE Championship, UFC, all that, even, you know, you throw in your bare knuckles, basically we're saying, is there room in a fan's life, a fight fan's life, for these types of fights? And we were saying, yes.
I have to agree. I mean, it's what people are talking about. And oftentimes we're convinced of these things with just, have you seen Narcos? No. Well, fuck, everyone else has. Shit. All right, I guess I got to see it. Don't know too much about Escobar, whether it's my age. Don't know too much about him because I just don't follow international news. I'm a gringo. Don't know much about him because, I kind of give up my bad guy news to just whatever's happening in the States or apply whatever country they're in. But when something's too good and everyone's talking about it, that's kind of what makes you watch something. And combat sports is like a squid, we'll say. And it's got these tentacles, right? And then obviously MMA is probably its most lethal. We'll say that's the one that carries the sting, the venom, the whatever, the ink. And but the other nine, you know, they can get to you too. There's boxing, there's college wrestling once a year, you know, the March Madness, we'll call it. There's every 4 years or every year, if you want to get technical, some of these big wrestling events, either a world championship or a Beat the Streets in New York or just the Olympics. Bare knuckles, one of them for me. And not all boxing either, because let me know when Pacquiao and Errol Spence were supposed to fight. Sure, I'm in. But then when he was out and Errol Spence fought the Cuban, Udonis Ugas, I believe it was, guess what? I still wanted to watch it because I knew Pacquiao was winding down and Pacquiao has won my money. But yeah, I think Jake Paul. Well, technically this was a Showtime event, not a Thriller event, but I still handed it over, you know. Woodley was a part of it. So I agree with you. I agree with you and Nolan. There has to be room for it. People are talking about it. So we're going to lead off, and let me tell you what the salaries were. Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul both took home $2 million flat for the eight-round fight at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland. That surprised me for two reasons. I just thought, you know, there's a little ego involved. Jake Paul has won me over, and sometimes he shows me that ego. But for him to split the purse with Tyron Woodley on paper, I don't know. That was impressive. Now, what I firmly believe and but don't know is that the pay-per-views, I imagine there's something that says, well, for every pay-per-view I sell, I get this amount, but you get that amount. So maybe he gets $2, the other guy gets $1, or 5 and 2, or 50 cents and 25. I don't know. Whatever it is, that's where I think Jake Paul makes more. But I'm telling you, there's no way McGregor, even if he was getting more on pay-per-view, would ever allow someone else to make as much as him flat. He's always going to want to make more. McGregor and Mayweather, they would not allow that, you know. But it did. It happened. And so to know that just even if they got no pay-per-views, they each got $2 million, shit, I was impressed. The fight was compelling. I thought it was close. But I was shocked. I was shocked when I read that's the way it played out. No win bonus for either guy. But again, we write this in the disclaimer. There's discretionary bonuses and obviously pay-per-view cuts. And I imagine that's where Jake Paul will outdistance Tyron Woodley. But that's why it goes. You can see Tyron Woodley thinking, hey, I was in this. I heard him. I came closer to finishing the fight than he came to finishing me. Let's do this again because that was an easy $2 million. You know, he barely got touched, Tyron Woodley. That's why he's pushing so hard, you know, to do a rematch. And he also knows if he wins the rematch, they got to do the trilogy. So this was amazing money for Tyron Woodley. And he almost won the damn fight.
You know, you talk about Connor and him never settling for something like that. And he's not the only one. You know, there's other fighters that do that as well. But where I do applaud Jake Paul is think about all the effort and the time that goes into that stance. You know, the back and forth calls with promoters and trying to argue why you deserve this and why you deserve that. That's where I applaud Jake Paul. I think he sees value in time and he doesn't waste his time doing silly shit. Everything he does is calculated. Everything he does is to promote the fight. We've interviewed him quite a few times with MMA Junkie, and every single time he's answered every question. He gives a good interview. He's on time. And, he promotes what he's doing. He doesn't say really like oddball shit. And everything that he does say, he's willing to back up in the ring, right? Like you rarely hear him talk about guys that he's not going to fight, right? He's not bringing up like random people like Mike Tyson or something stupid like that, right? He only talks about the guys that are going to make him money, the guys that he's going to actually fight. And so I applaud him, man. I applaud his strategy. I think that's great. I agree with you. I believe he probably does get more on the pay-per-view. But at the end of the day, like I said on Spinning Backclick, come on, man. I mean, it's not like they're just fighting other YouTubers. They didn't have to fight combat sports athletes. That's the hook, was them fighting combat sports athletes. That's what brought everybody's eyes. Because if you just fight another YouTuber, Logan, your godson, he's going to tune in. But we probably won't. All right, but the fact that he's fighting other combat sport athletes, that's what brought us in. And the fact that he keeps winning, is why we keep tuning in, because some one of these guys has to get his number, because this isn't the way life should go, right, in our eyes. If you talk shit to a professional athlete, the second he runs into you, he should serve you up. That's not happening with this kid. He's doing just enough in the gym to be competitive. You know, like even if he survived against Tyron Woodley, that's kind of a win. He beat Tyron Woodley. You know, his brother surviving with Floyd Mayweather is an embarrassment to boxing. That's the great one of the greatest fighters of all time. Floyd should have knocked him out. On whatever his chart, you saw Jake Paul make his chart of his hit list or whatever. On Floyd's wall, it should say knockout or nothing. Because that's the only way that life would make sense, everything that he's done. He had to go in there and he had to knock out Logan Paul. Because you know why? Because he's going to be one of the greatest athletes of all time, boxers of all time. And he's fighting a guy that's just getting his feet wet, right? It's Usain Bolt racing against a guy that somebody at the local high school said, he's pretty fast. That's it. Usain Bolt should smash him. And if he doesn't smash him, if it's even close, that guy probably has a little bit of bragging rights.
Yeah, a photo finish. Hey, they had to go to the replay to see who won. And Usain got me, but guess what? I gave that guy a race one day. So, folks, just know that, again, we may be dead wrong, and maybe they both got equal pay-per-views. And, again, that would shock me. But on paper, they each got $2 million. And then, I guess, of note, Amanda Serrano, who I think was probably the next biggest name on the card, she got $75,000. Yemelith Mercado got $45,000. Daniel Dubois, well, I take it wrong. I take it back. He made $100,000, and Joe Cusumano, he made $111,000. What's going on there? But again, I don't know if Amanda Serrano got some of the pay-per-view cuts or not. This is all just upfront money. Montana Love, $60,000. Ivan Barachink, Baranchik, he got $60,000 as well. Tommy Fury, $15,000. Anthony Taylor, $40,000. who knows what happened there? I don't know. Charles Conwell, $80,000. Juan Carlos Rubio, $20,000. You can definitely tell that a card like this has a lot of love went to the athletes in terms of just the upfront money. And that's something that if you want to get into, we can. But the disparity of boxing purses and how much the athlete gets versus MMA athletes and what they get when it comes to these bigger cards. With MMA, they're not as transparent. With boxing, they are. But boxing for sure looks like they share more. And I think that's why you got a lot of these guys doing certain call-outs. You know, I'll box. I think we're going to see Quentin Rampage Jackson pretty soon box. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, you stars like Vanderlei Silva or like what we're seeing with Vitor Belfort, that just gets repeated, you know, and I'm fine with it, to tell you the truth. But Tyron Woodley made $2 million, and he didn't get touched much. He did not get touched much. I'm not saying he won, but he did not get touched much. Sure, maybe he had an intense 2 months with headgear and, you know, his brain got rattled a little bit there. But I think the risk was worth the reward when it came to this particular business transaction in his life. And that's why he wants another shot. Will he get it? I don't know. That might be a tough one. That may have been it right there. Paul has kind of hinted towards, first it was just give me some time off. Then he played the Conor McGregor play of intimating that he might retire. And then I think earlier today I saw out of retirement. So that's him just trolling, fucking about. But whatever, you know, it's his show. You know, he can do what he wants, and he's doing really good.
But so on this week's spinning back clip, I took the position of being Jake Paul's manager or guiding his career. And if I were him, I would tell him you're a maniac if you're going to fight Tyron Woodley again. A, you barely got out of there. And B, what do you have to prove? You have nothing to prove, right? Let's keep this going as long as we can. We just beat two MMA guys. Both guys are former champions, okay? Get away from the MMA guys for a little while. Take on a pro wrestling guy. You know, like CM Punk just signed with AEW. But somebody like that and bring that world into all this, right? You just sucked in all of MMA, all their fans. Now suck in all of pro wrestling, or go to the NFL or the NBA and pick on one of those guys. But do that for maybe one or two fights and then come back to something like this. But why? But you have nothing to gain from beating Tyron Woodley again. Nothing. He has so everything.
You're just protecting your guy, making some money, but it seems like you're focusing on him staying undefeated.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's look, there's guys like Nate Diaz, right? Or Nick Diaz, because Nick only had one fight on his contract. A Diaz brother, I get it. Okay, people will tune into that. Tyron Woodley, a rematch, I'm sure people would dig it. But those guys are towards the end of their career. Why not make them wait? Why not make them get older and then go back and revisit it? You don't have to do it now.
Yeah, if I'm trying to protect Jake Paul, that's probably what I would do as well. But I don't think – I think Tyron Woodley is obviously a hard puncher. He doesn't have a diverse boxing attack. And one of the things he got accused of in MMA is just being hesitant. And I think they kind of knew all those things. Former champ, avenged Ben Askren's loss, so we got that tie. Can talk a good game, getting older. Yeah, let's take this guy. I think we'll be face and then safe. And then when they notice that this was a close fight, I think they're going to go back and go, okay, that was a close one against the guy that's kind of hesitant and is getting older. We got to be careful here, because if there's someone that likes to, you know, throw him, no problem, like Matt Brown, for example. Matt Brown saying, I'm the king of Ohio or something like that. See, Matt, I don't think we've ever accused him of being hesitant. And he can throw hands. He is older, but he's older, but not hesitant. I don't know. Now, is he as strong as Tyron Woodley? I think cumulative punch-wise, yes, he can put you out the same way Tyron can do it with one punch. So, I don't know. That might be a dangerous fight for him. What do you think?
It's just, I don't know that Matt Brown's skills transfer over to boxing. You know what I mean? Like, the timing of it, speed is going to be a big factor, I think. But on the same note, it's like I don't know that Jake Paul's that great either, that he could exploit things like that.
Right.
So he'd probably be in the same boat that he would be with Woodley.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think he had gone through the ringer in those 8 rounds, and I think that's why he was like, hold on a minute, man. I got to think this through. I think he wants to stay undefeated. I think he wants to be 10-0 and then bounce. And somewhere along the line, there'll be a tough test in there somewhere. But I think he wants to, A, make money, and B, kind of play it safe. And that's fine, because he is playing the game, man. Come on. To go from Triller to Showtime, and this is no disrespect to Triller, because obviously they've done some pretty amazing things. But an actual boxing promoter with proper boxing announcers, you know, put this show on. It was on Showtime pay-per-view. And they had, you know, boxers, real boxers on the undercard. That's pretty amazing that someone was able to do that based off of their popularity and them only being in the sport for a few years. And I think he's doing pretty good. And I bet you other boxers are privately happy for him, but privately jealous too that they can't seem to do something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. All right, folks. So, look, when the next fight happens, just count on MMA Junkie to probably cover it, especially if it involves somebody in MMA. But I think once Jake Paul started tangling with MMA guys, I think that's when MMA Junkie realized, well, we're going to try to be a part of this, you know, until it's obvious that maybe it's not our spot, and maybe that'll take Jake versus a boxer, or who knows? I don't know. That's when it'll get interesting, is if MMA Junkie, I can't speak on behalf of the editorial, but when MMA Junkie is still covering Jake Paul, but let's say Jake Paul's just fighting another YouTuber or someone from another sport, what are we going to do then? Have you heard?
I don't know.
Because he's not an MMA athlete, so now we're just, I mean, at that point, we might as well randomly cover Pacquiao versus Ugas, and we didn't do that. We are going to cover Vitor versus Oscar, but we got an MMA tie there. You know, that's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think once he can, I don't know. I really don't.
Speaking of CM Punk, well, I do want to answer one other thing. I got a question from Gally from Toronto, a listener. He said, why do they make the rounds in boxing even? Doesn't that make it easy for a fight to be a draw? And I'll tell you what, when Jake Paul was off to the races and he was up 3-0, but then Woodley came back and knocked him, not down, but hurt him, because a knockdown would have been a 10-8. But had he either gotten, had he won the next three, you know, we were looking at a possibility of 4-4, a draw. What the fuck? Why did we do all this for? Gally, pro boxing fights for used to be 15 rounds. And the if I recall, it may have only been the title fights. I don't know. But when Ray Boom Boom Mancini fought Dooku Kim, I believe his name was, and Dooku Kim succumbed to injuries and died afterwards, they made the fights go from 15 to 12. Now, over 12 rounds, we get our fair share of draws, but it's not as much as you think. But I could see over 8 rounds, maybe there being more draws out there. And so would the solution be, hey, let's just have a 9-round fight out there? Maybe, but I follow boxing pretty well, and you start off at 4, 6, 8, 10, and that's just the way it works. And I think it doesn't matter too much if you get the draw. Losses definitely hurt you in boxing, but all I can tell you is they used to be 15, and that definitely helped out a little bit. But I was thinking the same thing as you through halfway through the fight. I was like, this could wind up a draw.
I don't know that draws hurt boxing though, right? Because genuinely, it means a rematch of a big fight again, right? Because really, if you think about it, if it's 8 rounds, it's 10 rounds, whatever, it's 4-4, 5-5. If that was such a big deal and they hated draws that much, they could almost turn it into, all right, well, when we get to that, then it's the judges just have to pick a winner, you know, who they thought overall won the fight, you know, kind of like pride style, if they hated draws that much. But I don't really think they hate draws.
Yeah, I don't know. I would not have wanted to see Paul and Woodley run it back if they drew. But I would want to see them run it back if Woodley had won. But I think Jake Paul's in control of things, and I already saw the fight happen, and that's that. They can get back to it if Woodley fights other people and wins. Then I think hopefully Jake Paul would reconsider. And he has a clear opening there with the tattoo. I just don't know if he's going to do it or what. That's the ultimate getting punked if he gets the tattoo. And Jake Paul goes, nah, I'm not going to fight you. I mean, those things are permanent. You know what I mean? Like, that would be brutal, you know, to carry that on you. Mm-hmm. To carry that love Jake Paul tattoo on you and not get the rematch. So he has to make sure there's a legal binding contract somewhere that makes it worth it for him to get this tattoo. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You have to expect that if you're Tyron Woodley, especially with Jake Paul. I mean, I'd say you almost have to expect that with anybody, but with Jake Paul, you would have to have some, and he's already talked about it. You know, like if he were to do it, there would be some kind of legal document that says the fight has to happen. But that's where I'm confused, because I felt like they didn't even need to do any of that. I thought they had a handshake deal with that. That's what was going to happen if he lost the fight. So I don't know why Jake Paul really even gave him that out.
And the urgency with Tyron is he's been around combat sports. He knows when something's hot, you do it. But at the same time, the clock's probably ticking. And who knows how he's been with his finances. Maybe he's been better off than people think. But hopefully this was enough money to, you know, make him stable for a few years, if and when the next one happens. But we have to move on a little bit. Let's talk about Justin Gaethje and some comments he had about the lightweight division. He says, this used to be the marquee division. What happened ever since Khabib left? He says, we're kind of a laughing stock. Now, he's bitter because two fighters that fought for the vacant title were Michael Chandler and Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira, of course, no one's trying to disrespect him, but he's had the type of career where he wasn't dominant at one point. He took some L's in two different divisions. And I think this is something that's been said a lot. He seemed like the type of guy that was a front runner. If he was kicking your ass, he was letting you have it. But the minute the tide turned and he faced some adversity, there was a lot of times where he checked out. Now, to be fair, I haven't seen that Charles Oliveira in the last 3 years. Chandler really, really had him against the ropes, we'll say. And Oliveira was able to come back and win. So the win streak backs it up. His wins back it up. Look good. But something just doesn't sit right with Gaethje. I understand what he's saying. When you have a dominant champ like Khabib leading the way and you have all these other killers, then, yeah, you got to agree that that division's up there, you know, as one of the best. But right now what you have is Oliveira versus Poirier, and it seems like we have to twist Poirier's arm to take the fight, because if Conor McGregor was healthy, I'm not sure Dustin Poirier takes that fight. So, again, there seems to be like a disrespect or a diss maybe towards the belt by guys that just want to make more money and bigger prize fighting fights. And I guess if I were them, maybe I would even think that way. But you got that. He's bitter that Chandler had a shot at it when Chandler hasn't really been putting in the time in the UFC. It appears that's what Gaethje's gripe is. Though Chandler's been a part of the sport for over 10 years and has been a belt holder two times over at Bellator. So you got to respect that. Plus, he did what he was told. Hey, can you show up to Abu Dhabi and be the backup for Gaethje versus Khabib? Sure. Okay, shows up, makes weight. Ah, we're good. They're fighting. All right, that happened. Khabib won. Look, you're going to fight a guy named Dan Hooker, who's one of the top 10 guys. And supposedly, if you impress, you might get a shot at Khabib, who has said he's retired, but we kind of don't think he is. Yeah, sure. I'll go do that. You know, he goes and does that and handles Dan Hooker. And then when Poirier kind of was one of the two parties that also could have impressed on that same night that I just talked about and did, he says, nah, I want to run it back with McGregor, you know, cha-ching. Then what was Chandler supposed to do? Gaethje had just had his shot, and Oliveira had damn sure earned his shot by beating Tony Ferguson and having a streak. So I just think it was timing. I don't think they could have gone right back to Gaethje when he was the one that just had his shot. That's where I would kind of not side with him, you know. But I understand his frustration. I really do. The belt just doesn't seem like it means much because of what's happening here. Maybe Poirier and Oliveira will solidify that a little bit. But what were your thoughts on what he said?
I understand his frustration and where he's coming from, but it's directed in the wrong place. It shouldn't be directed towards other fighters. It should be directed towards the UFC. Because if the UFC doesn't allow that behavior, it doesn't happen. Trust me. They've shown time and time before that if they don't like something, it ain't going to happen. They're the ones that are pushing for a Poirier and Conor rematch and all that. Like, they're the ones that facilitate that behavior. That's why the belt doesn't matter. That's why the belt seems kind of silly right now. Because you have arguably who should be the best guy in that division saying he doesn't want to fight for the title. He'd rather fight for money over here. The belt doesn't mean nothing, man. Interim titles, all that crap that they do. That's why it's like that. I can't blame the fighters. I can't blame a fighter for wanting to try and make as much money as they possibly can. I can't blame them for that. It's the people that facilitate that behavior that you should be looking at.
I agree. It's almost like I wish there was a bonus goes. I know the bonus comes when you defend and you get the pay-per-views, but I almost wish there was like this $1 million bonus anytime you win the title. And therefore, you have to go, if I win, I get my win bonus, my show money, maybe 50 G's if I'm the bonus winner, but I get an automatic $1 million championship bonus. Then when I'm champion, I get pay-per-view. But right away, somebody wins, they have a chance for the title, and it's like they have two columns, and it says belt, money. You know, and am I in the neighborhood where I can fight a Conor McGregor? This is what I can make. Okay, let's see what if I can match that as champ. No, it doesn't appear that I can't. Give me McGregor. You know what I mean? That's basically what they're doing. Now, I just kind of summed it up probably in a silly way, but that's all they're doing is they're just measuring it to see if it's more lucrative than it isn't. You know, and again, I know from the UFC, I always say these are just business transactions. I get it, but you're a $1 billion business. McGregor's got to fight someone. And usually that's going to be a big fight itself. I just don't see why this is played out the way it's played out. I still firmly believe that if Dustin Poirier did fight McGregor this last time and just would have fought for a world title, his title defenses would have put him in line to probably see McGregor anyway, but just him make some good money. But at the end of the day, no one would have been able to take that undisputed from him if he won, because I don't know if he beats Chandler and I don't know if he beats Oliveira. That's what we have to see. But I understood Justin Gaethje and what he was saying. I just kind of disagreed with the part where, you know, Oliveira and Chandler was a tough pill to swallow for him. But because the way I laid it out, what was the UFC supposed to do? It was Poirier versus McGregor. Gaethje had just had a shot. Tony Ferguson kind of fell out of the ranks. Islam Makhachev just hasn't arrived yet in that regard. And the other two were grinding, you know. So that's that.
I almost can't even hate on the UFC because it's a business. And if Dana White's looking at, all right, if we match up Poirier and Connor, I'm going to take home an extra 40 mil for my family this year or something. I get that. I'm human. I would do something stupid like that. The only issue I have is when you sit there and try and convince us that you're just like the NHL, just like the NFL, just like the NBA, the MLB. You're not. Just don't say that part. If you want to run the business the way you want, whatever makes the most money, you're something else. You're not a sport. And just say that. But don't convince us that you're a sport if you're going to run the organization that way. That's not how sports work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that quote a lot. I've said it a lot as well, and maybe I haven't heard it as much.
But yeah, that's just kind of what it comes down to is if you want to be a sport, then the best always have to fight each other. Regardless if they're bringing in the numbers or whatever, it's all about who is the best. Not who's going to make the most money, not all that crap. It's about who's the best.
Yeah. All right. Sorry you lost me there for just a second. I think you covered up for me. Thank you. Let's keep going. McGregor and Nate Diaz had a lengthy back and forth on Twitter. Sometimes I get a kick out of these. Sometimes I don't. Part of it has to do with I tend to grade smack talk. And a lot of times these guys and gals come up a little short in that department. This one was good. It was lengthy. They had memes and GIFs and friendly reminders of stuff that's happened in the past 5 years that they've been, you know, rivals, not just guys that chirp at each other on social media, but guys that have actually, you know, spilled blood. McGregor and Diaz have fought 25 minutes one time, and then the other fight had a finish. I love this one, Goes. I'll do my best here to tell you how it went down between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. Now, as you saw, the reason you lost me for a second is because my computer is tripping. But McGregor showed a picture of him versus Nate Diaz. And he simply added, it's him and Diaz facing off. Diaz is clearly the taller fighter. But McGregor says, now add 30 pounds of muscle onto me and say ding ding in a Dublin accent. See, normally I would say, what the fuck does that mean? You know? But I get it. I get it. And I'll give him a pass. That was pretty good. He's just saying, hey, this is what happened. I think he came across this picture somewhere. He does look like he's an outsized guy. He's 1-1. He's trying to pick a fight. So let me just say that, folks, while my leg is recuperating, I'm getting jacked. I'm getting stronger. I'm coming back stronger than ever. So I think he's kind of trying to throw all that in this little silly first poke. And Nate Diaz comes back and he says, stupid computer's a little bogged down. He says, bruh, you can't walk or fight right now. Why are you talking shit? We talk later.
That's pretty good.
I liked it. Yeah. That's a good comeback. Yeah. To the point, go fix your leg first and then we'll talk later. And no need to remind that we're 1-1, you know. Let's just move on. So, okay, I like it. I'm starting to think, yeah, this one's going to be pretty good. McGregor then says, who can't come through and see you, little skinny fool? You be smacked up and rolled up, you bum. Callie's mine. Okay, come through and see you. I mean, how fast is he typing? That I would think it's easy to say come through and see me, but you'll get smacked up and rolled up. You bomb Cali's mind, so he's just poking fun at the fact that he's stuck in Cali while he does his rehab. One guy's in Northern California. I'm in Southern California. Cali's mind. Okay, got it. Nate Diaz says, "Nah, bitch. You should have learned how to not break your leg when I checked your shit, and you crutched out of the fight with me, and now you're gonna fight me when you can't run for your life this time. With your broken ass, you lost the last fight and ran for the hills just like Khabib. You're a pussy too." So the reason I'm kind of giving Diaz more of a pass because some of that stuff's silly is I think the Diaz brothers have made it perfectly clear we're not orators of any kind. We just kind of type fast, and whatever we say is gonna be cool anyway because we're just kids from the street. And that's why I think he gets that pass when I read it that way. So of course, I don't know about this Habib run and stuff, but maybe he's talking about the street fight that they had, which I don't remember Habib running at all, honestly. And did Conor run in their fight? No, I watched the second fight a few times and I don't remember anything that I could accuse Conor. He was there. He was there till the end. He fixed the cardio issue. Nate Diaz had a chance to win that fight, and that would have been the end of it. He would have been 2-0 against McGregor, and he blew it. So you got to give McGregor credit up to there, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, see, I have a lot of trouble understanding things on Twitter, especially when they're written that way. I thought what he meant by running was like you didn't ask for the third fight, you just took off and started fighting other.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. He then says, this is Nate talking. "That means I'm the double triple champ of this whole shit. Fuck all you pussies. I don't know what all that is." Again, I think Nathan's implying that him and his team got the best of Habib and their team, and then throw in Conor McGregor's two belts. Maybe that's why he's the double triple champ. I don't know. Then he also says, "P.S. You jump shit on your country, bitch. Go home. Don't you got any friends?" So that's a poke at McGregor always saying, "I'm loyal to my team. SBG, Ireland, what's up? I don't move around." Remember, he accused Dillashaw of that on the season of the reality show when it was him versus Faber. "Why did you leave? You went to your coach in Denver, but as we've seen with McGregor, he's had camps in Portugal. So that means it wasn't always at SBG. He may have had his SBG teammates there, but didn't have his training camp in that spot. But again, McGregor is so popular and forceful that I think people just don't remember that. And I think McGregor quite a few times has actually gone against what he said, in a way. But here's where it starts to get interesting. McGregor then says, "I'm the belly when I get you. Into the belly when I get you." So maybe he's saying, I'm gonna go to the body. Little cockroach Diaz brother, it's three on the street, grab the heat. I think, and he shows him knocking down Nate Diaz. Does he mean a three piece if he sees him on the street?
I don't understand.
I got a three piece combo for you, maybe. Forgive me if I make some noise. Let me just hit this little video that accompanied that and see if there was a three piece that knocked Nate Diaz down, because I know he's knocked down Nate Diaz, and I think this might be a play off three piece in a soda. And of course, it may not work here. Here it comes. Here it comes. Three in the street. What's three in the street? Give me a second here. Here it comes. No, he just threw a big left. So maybe it's because he's knocked him down three times over the course of their fights. Who knows? But that's what he said. They continue. Nate Diaz now posts, "It's just business. Remember, you're the sportsman. I showed you guys this street shit. I fought both your teams out the cage before you guys realized the real fight game, sporty little bitches." So again, he's throwing him and Habib into the whole mix. That's why it means he's fought both your teams outside the cage, because he's had problems with these guys outside the cage. Sorry, McGregor had said He fled the cage. I boxed his whole family around. So that's when Habib jumped the cage and he hit a couple of the guys from Habib's team. And nobody finished me, mate. But that's wrong, Goes. He got finished by Habib. He got choked out by Habib and choked out by Nate. So I don't know why he's saying that. He says, I broke my leg. So maybe he's just referring to the Poirier fight that he didn't get finished. I broke my leg. That's why the fight was finished. And then he says, no one or nothing else done anything to me. I would disagree. I mean, fucking Poirier clearly knocked him out in part two, right? Even if we forget part three, he clearly knocked him out in part two. And anyway, don't worry about them. I'm in Cali months doing what I want. It's three on the street now, mate. Fuck your little sport. I already read what Nate said, which I don't know. I don't think Nate was a big enough star until he said what did, and then eventually got around to the Conor fight. Conor made Nate rich. Nate didn't make Conor rich. If Conor doesn't come along, I think the Diaz brothers were always popular, Goes, but they're always maybe 250,000 to show fighters. And unless they become champs and get pay-per-view cuts, I think they max out. I think he'll never have that street swag or that, you know, validity in that regard over Conor McGregor.
The card that I don't understand why he never plays is anytime Conor McGregor brings up that they're 1-1 or whatever, I would disagree. And I would just say, you won one fight, I won one fight. But when I beat you, I had to be pulled off of you. You had to be told by judges that you won your fight. There's a big difference to me in that. One guy finished the other guy. To me, he has the advantage.
I agree. I think I've told you what I feel about that is kind of like when two teams are tied over a two-leg series in soccer, except the away goal counts for more. I feel like this is the away goal. Nate Diaz, if this was Champions League, Nate Diaz would advance because he did get the finish, so he got an away goal. They are 1-1 on paper, and that's the narrative that Conor will always push. But, yes, I agree. Nate did finish him, and that's pretty good smack talk to always carry in your back pocket. But this is where he really made me laugh. He goes, I ended this guy's career. LOL, what happened to him? Get him back here. You need some help. And why you just throw your friends away, shithead? So now he's talking the loyalty card again. And what he's talking about, he included the gif of, remember when Conor was in the movement on like a gorilla and he had that guy, I think his name was Ido Parente or something like that, some movement coach. And remember when Nate Diaz said touch butt in the park? He fucking destroyed him there, man. You're playing touch butt with some dork in the park. Oh, that was a classic line. I don't think I heard of this guy after that series of fights was over. And that's why he's saying I ended this guy. But just showing the video and those guys are kind of strutting along, it does look silly. And that was epic by Nate Diaz.
That was a good one.
Yeah. And then just to finish things out, let me see. I think it started to wrap up right around that time. McGregor says, I'm on a hair trigger, mate. You stay where you are hiding. If you know what's good for you, God bless you. Kid, have a good day. I guess I need to put hair trigger in Urban Dictionary to see what that means. But I think it means if we see each other on the street, I'm capping your ass. Or it's gonna get ugly. Yeah, I shouldn't put words in his mouth. But I think he's implying that. And remember he did the – so you guys can't see right now with the video, but remember when he did the little pistol to the head motion, like I'm an assassin, like I will end you, that type of stuff. We're hearing a little bit more of that out of guys in MMA. And I don't know if this is the part where I'm not liking where kind of rappers do the same thing. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to look up what hair trigger means. I should have done it before the show because this is something I saw a few days ago. Hair trigger in the Urban Dictionary says, let's see here. I don't know if that's a quote from a movie or what, but it says a type of gun trigger that requires a very small amount of pressure to respond. Also can be defined as someone with a very short temper There you go. You know, so I don't know what he's saying, but he kind of wanted to just end it. And that's about the time where this whole thing ended between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. But that was one of the better ones. Nate just tells him, fuck you. And then the other guy says, it's none of that hitting arms and commentary screaming with me. It's silence and holes in the head. There you go. Getting more specific there. Bones heal. Blunt force trauma to the brain, not so much. So his leg will heal, but all that blunt force trauma to Nate Diaz's brain, you know, it's not gonna. That's what he's saying to Nate. Yeah, I kind of like that. And then Nate shows a picture of, it says, and now you dead. And it looks like that's when he choked out Connor and Nate's walking away. So when I said they had pictures and memes and GIFs, that added to this, and that's why it was good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's that, folks. Of course, all this is on MMA Junkie. You can always check it out. The drama of the sport is big nowadays, is all I can say. And these are two of the bigger names. How about Sean O'Malley explaining why he turned down Frankie Edgar for UFC 268 in November? This guy, I don't think he can lose fans any faster. Except, I don't think he really is. But normally, this would kind of lose you fans. He doesn't want to fight in New York because he just doesn't want to pay the taxes. And it seems like he's Vegas is just more convenient for him. But now he's not fighting Frankie Edgar because they gave it to Marlon Vera. I don't know who he's going to fight. But remember, he's not in a hurry to fight ranked guys. What's this guy doing? Like, does he not realize there's going to be other fighters that start to chase him down? And he may have blown 2 years of his life trying to play too much chess?
Maybe, but so far, so good, it seems like. I mean, again, I go back to the UFC. Like, these guys are only going to take what you allow them to take. So if this particular move pisses the UFC off enough, then we're going to see that in Sean O'Malley's next booking, right? But he's in this position because the UFC put him in that position. They gave him that little amount of power that he has, that I guarantee you he feels is a lot bigger than it actually is, but it is there. He does hold some cards. You're right. You know, we saw he was at the Paul fight with Woodley, got a good pop there. I've seen him around before and seen fans flock to him. People like this kid, okay? A lot of people don't read these types of stories where they start to hate him because of that type of stuff. Most of the people in that arena don't even know those types of things. They just see his performance. They remember his last performance, and they go, man, he beat the hell out of that kid. He has a little bit of power that the UFC gave him. The UFC needs to put their foot down now, and I think we're going to know with that next booking just where they stand in the Sean O'Malley business.
Well, here's why I think he's wrong. Because he said, you know, at one point him and Sean Shelby weren't getting along, but they hashed it out. Bro, I've known these guys for a long time. I'm not saying they're dicks or anything like that, but they do not like to get shown up. When they want you to work, they want you to work. And it just seems to be too much. But listen, if they were willing, because Francis didn't want to fight 1 month earlier, to create this whole interim thing, and that's the baddest man on the planet who could for sure outdraw Sean O'Malley. Trust me, I'm not certain that they're completely going to just get over it and just give him Vegas because he asked for Vegas. You know, I just think there's other fighters more popular than Sean O'Malley who they butted heads with and just went past them. Masvidal versus Usman the first time. When Masvidal's price was too high, they said, well, then we're going with Burns. Masvidal got lucky that Burns got COVID, and he flew with 1 week notice to go down there, and he did get paid. But it doesn't always work out for these guys, you know? And again, some of these names are bigger than O'Malley, and O'Malley has yet to really beat any of the top fighters. I think he thinks he's more of he's further along than he really is. And again, these are just key years where I think he could have already been that guy, but I think he's farting around too much with waiting for this bigger contract, and I don't know. I think he's misplaying his hand, honestly. I think if they ask you to fight Frankie Edgar, you fight Frankie Edgar. And if you pay a little bit more in taxes, well, if you're just this money-making machine that used to sell a lot of Reeboks and you got your own strain of marijuana and all these other, you know, advertising opportunities, and that should shore up your taxes a little bit. Yeah, the taxes ain't that much. You know what I mean? Anyway, moving on. Combate Global says, fight night bonuses available only for COVID vaccinated athletes. Wow, that was one of the more glaring headlines that I wrote this week. Of course, if you tie in what's happening with the world, they're not out of line in a sense that it seems like we're seeing stuff like that. Delta Airlines said, if you work for us and you don't have the vaccine, you're going to pay $200 more a month in insurance premium. There's some concerts that are saying either the whole festival or the concert itself, unless you're vaccinated, you're not getting in. So we're seeing a lot more of this. But in MMA, we haven't seen something this specific. What were your thoughts on this?
If you're going to go to their party, you got to follow their rules. That's just what it comes down to. If you're a fighter and you don't like it, there's plenty of places you can go, but I don't know that you're going to make the money that you would have made in that situation. I don't know anybody that's really gone to combative and not enjoyed their time there. I haven't really heard anybody say bad things about them. That's the stance they want to take. It's their party. It's their rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. I agree. And I don't think this will wind up biting him in the ass other than maybe a fighter or two. But I don't think Combate is unstable. And I don't think they have any type of a prized possession that all they can do is maybe sit out, but basically not go their way. They probably, I'm sure, have pretty tight contracts where if they don't want to let you go, they won't unless they get something in return. Maybe I'm wrong there. But I haven't seen them build up anybody like that, you know. Remember, they used to do business with Tito Ortiz. I don't know what kind of a contract they had at the time with him. He seems to be out. But at the time, I just wonder how this had gone down with Tito Ortiz. Now, Tito gets so much upfront money, he may not care about the $10,000 bonus or whatever's out there. But it would have been interesting to see what his comments are. And I can't wait for the first reporter to go, hey, Tito, you know, in regards to your upcoming boxing matches or, you know, versus Anderson Silva, let's just go back a sec. What are your thoughts on? I'd love to see what he has to say about that. That's low-hanging fruit for any reporters that are out there. And if you happen to talk to Tito Ortiz, bring that one up. Let's see how that one goes down. Dana White gave the first contract to a fighter that lost in Dana White Contender Series. His name is Carlos Candelario. And it's not that I disagree with it. It's just, what was he waiting for? I thought he definitely could have done this before. Yeah. And the only thing he said was, this was the right thing to do. Well, if that was the only criteria, there was a few fights where I thought it was the right thing to do. You know, there's probably about at least 3 to 5 times that I was either there in person or I saw it on TV. I go, man, I hope both guys got it. They both laid it on the line. What'd you think?
Exactly the same thing. I mean, obviously I can't give you names right now, but I guarantee you if we go through the history of the show, probably one per season at least, if not two, you could probably point to two of the losing fighters and say, man, that guy probably deserved it as well. So his explanation was kind of a little odd. Especially, have you ever noticed like episode one, they always seem to give out a lot of contracts, and I don't know if that's like to kind of set a tone or something. I don't know, but I really wasn't that impressed by this week. The flying knee, incredible. How do you not give that guy a contract? I get that. But after that, I mean, everything was just okay. They lost the fight. It was fun to see Laura Sanko on there and see her contribution. It seemed like she had been doing this all along. So I like that aspect. But it probably didn't go the way other premieres have for them.
Let's pivot to Laura Sanko because that was pretty historic. In the history of Zuffa, UFC Zuffa, she's the first female to be part of the broadcast team. Whether you want to call her an analyst or a color commentator, she was there. Normal Dana White Contender Series, she does a lot of pre-fighters. Hey, you know, you're going to be fighting here tonight. Tell us what your thoughts are. Okay, she does that. She also does the Bruce Buffer role, like an in-ring announcer, and tells you who the winner and who the loser is. And then she'll do the post-fight interviews, not necessarily inside the octagon, but in the back. And then she'll even do the post-fight show, kind of like a little mini show where Dana White and her announce to the world who's getting a contract. So she definitely wears a lot of hats. If you've ever been there in person, you see her running around everywhere. And then jokingly, of course, we've always told her, watch those steps, because she wears the tightest skirts. And those steps are steep. And we're always like, oh, I hope she doesn't fall. But, man, she handles it all. She does great. But now they added this role for her. I thought she did very well. I didn't watch enough of it to go spotless. I loved everything. I don't know. I'm not a TV guy in that sense. But when I was listening, when I was watching, I thought she was doing good. But I think even she would agree, she'll probably have to just tighten a few things up here or there. But it was definitely a solid debut.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a tough pill, right? I mean, she found out, we spoke to her today.
True.
She found out at 5 p.m. the day before. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, don't you kind of prepare for these interviews anyway and that you're going to do? And yeah, but it's different when you have to analyze a fighter and have to possibly critique what they're doing out there. There's more homework that's involved in that sort of thing. So for getting it on less than 24 hours notice and still having to do your job, I thought she did pretty good. Yeah. Before the interview started, we were talking a little bit today. And the one thing that I really commended her on is, you know, even on our show, George, when we have back-to-back guests, when we don't have that little break in between guests, it's a little difficult to take one hat off and put another one on that quickly and just get into it, even if it's a two-minute rest. But just to be able to relax, change your hat, and get into the gear for, if you're talking to Stipe Miocic and now it's time to talk to Ngannou, to just make that pivot, you need a little bit of time. And she wasn't really getting that. She was just flying to do the next thing. And she's got to be one way and then do the next thing and be another way. That I thought was very difficult. And she agreed. She said that was kind of hard to just switch gears like that. But it seems like next week it's going to be the same thing. And she'll have one show under her belt. And I think she's going to knock it out of the park, man. And it was pretty cool to hear that Dana White is already saying that she's going to do you know, regular fight night cards and stuff like that. So she said everything the guys do, she's going to do. So we'll see. See how that goes out.
I think for this season, you'll see her wear all the hats. And I think for next season, if she stays, which I don't anticipate that she won't, I think she'll just lose one of those little steps of running around. UFC's got a talented squad everywhere. Maybe they can bring Joe Martinez in for those run of Tuesdays. Whatever, but keep her as a broadcaster and then have her still do some of her other duties. I did want to go back to something, Goes, and I know you might think, oh man, this guy won't leave the guy alone. But look at UFC 266, Volkanovski Ortega, Shevchenko Murphy, Diaz Lawler, Blades versus Rozenstruik, Andrade versus Calvillo. That's a solid main card, right? All the fights are either title fights or they're just exciting, like legend fights, or they're pivotal fights within their division. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm going to skip to UFC 268, Usman Covington, Nama Yunus, Zhang Weili, Gaethje Chandler, Strickland Rockhold, Jurandami, D-Randami versus Aldana, Edgar versus Vera, Iaquinta versus Green. I don't know who's going to make the main card or not. I think it's pretty obvious the first three that I said will. But again, solid card, right?
Mm-hmm.
UFC 269 in Vegas the next month. This is December. Nunes versus Pena, Garbrandt versus Kai Kara France. Then this is what we're hearing. It could be Moreno versus Pantoja, or maybe Francis versus Ciryl Gane. Who knows? My point is, if they don't put O'Malley on this card, do you really think anyone in Vegas gives a shit, or anyone at home ordering gives a shit?
No.
That's what I'm saying. And that's what I think he needs to realize. I don't think people give a shit if he's on the card or not. If he is, sure, he really is fun. That part of him, I'll give it up. His fights are usually pretty exciting. But this is a message to him and anyone else. A lot of people just sometimes don't care if you're not, if the cards are shaping up in a certain fashion. You know, that's why I hope he doesn't think that maybe, okay, I'm cool with Sean Shelby. he'll just put me on Vegas. I could easily see them not putting him on the Vegas card and them just moving on to another card. Maybe they'll put him on another one. I don't know why this is bugging me, but the whole thing with him not wanting to fight ranked fighters or whatever, it just, I don't know. He's blowing an opportunity that so many wish they had. You and I talked to Jake Hadley today, and minus some visa issues, he just hasn't been able to get to be a part of the UFC, and he's earned his way, and he wants to do it so bad, and, you know, and this other guy's just fucking about.
Mm-hmm. I could even see the UFC telling them, we're going to put you on that card, and then just not doing it. You know, we changed our mind or something. I mean, yeah. I've seen very few people really get the upper hand on the UFC, and if they have, it's for a limited time.
When we came in on Monday, we talked about Chikadze. He looked good. Yes, he could be a sub. I don't think he'll get that. I think, if anything, Holloway would be a sub if they wanted a sub. I just don't think you can be a sub when Max Holloway's out there. Max Holloway's going to fight Yair Rodriguez. So either they're not going to have a sub or what. But we talked about that. We want to see Battle versus Trajan Gore. Tercios and Battle, they got their hands raised. Congrats to them. Daniel Rodriguez looked good against Kevin Lee. But now we need to see him against top welterweights. I think we blasted through this. Left out a few things. Mearshart with a huge upset over Muradov. Abdul Al-Hassan, what a head kick to Alicio de Chirico. Sam Alvey was pissed at the judges, but I thought it was acceptable for the scores that he got for it to work out the way he did. But he got some nice push from Dana White. He seems to be one of Dana's favorites, and the fact that he always shows up to fight, but there's a difference between that and when you're losing, Sam Alvey still gets off that stool and goes out there and tries to either finish or win the fight. He doesn't just turtle up and say, all right, you got me, you know, on to the next fight. He really likes to throw down, and I think he's won Dana White. He may get one more fight, even though he's on a bad streak right now.
Well, it seems like he will, yeah. And I mean, a guy like Sam Alvey is just so lovable. You know, like he doesn't have a bad bone in his body, which is crazy because he's a fighter. But there's been a lot of those, and Dana White hasn't really taken to all of them. But props to him for winning Dana over.
If I mentioned these before, apologies, I'll say it fast. And if I haven't, here you go. This will put a bow on this event. Chikadze, Mearshart, Al-Hassan, and Sabatini did get the bonuses, and Tercios and Heistand were going to get taken care of. He said not as much of a bonus, but they'll still be happy. That sounds like 40 grand to me, or maybe 30 or 35. Who knows? This weekend, Brunson versus Till goes. Who gets it? Who gets the job done?
I'm going to go with Derek Brunson. I always get it wrong when I bet Derek Brunson, but I do feel like he's turned a corner a little bit. And Darren Till, I just don't know what we have with that kid, man. I feel like he has the makings of being a superstar. He's just had a lot of bad luck. But I think if Derek Brunson can be a patient fighter and unleash when he needs to and not go overboard, I think he should win the fight.
Yeah, that's the big main event, folks. Aspinall versus Pivak. Alex Perez and Matt Schnell, they're getting down as well. Modestus Bouskas versus local favorite Khalil Rountree. They're on the card. Meatball Molly McCann, Patty Pimlet, Julian Arosa, he's back. Dalcha Lungiambula, he's back. Check it out. It's this weekend. It's called UFC Fight Night 191, and it's also UFC on ESPN Plus 49. This will be a UFC on ESPN Plus offering. And lastly, let's finish this. Thoughts and prayers to the family of Kyle Reyes, dead at age 30, a fixture at Extreme Couture for many years. He passed away. He had a bicep injury, which led to a surgery. He had complications in the surgery. He actually made it home, but then afterwards had a certain reaction. And by the time he was found and sent back, he was fighting for his life and he didn't pull through. Again, 30 years, too young for any human being to go. I want to specify this wasn't COVID related. And the sweet little girl that he left behind, we've seen her many times at Extreme Couture. They've set up a GoFundMe page, I'm sure, for her and for his family to deal with expenses. and hopefully to maybe give this young lady some sort of help as she gets bigger, because there won't be, you know, her daddy won't be there for to help guide her. So I'm going to tweet this as soon as we finish recording this. If you want to be a part of that GoFundMe, I'll tweet the link to that. And again, our thoughts and prayers with Kyle Reyes. Goes, any thoughts on Kyle Reyes? I think you may have known him just a little bit better than me. What would you like to say?
Well, I mean, the kid was always had a smile on his face. He was a good training partner. You know, he would always help people out. It was different when he would walk in the gym, because you're right, he would walk in with his daughter and his daughter would kind of play while he was there, and you could see him doing his thing, but he would always kind of look over and make sure she's doing okay. But he was just all around seemed like a good guy in the gym, you know, a great training partner, a great addition to the gym. Everybody brings something, I think, to the table when they get on those mats. And the one thing that I noticed that he brought was just, he was there for whoever needed him at any time, and just really nice guy. It sucks that this happened.
Big time. On our page, MMAJunkie.com, our website, there's also links there. So in case maybe you don't follow me on Twitter, get that sorted. But if you don't, go to MMA Junkie and you'll see the link there. But speaking of Goes and I, on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at MMA Junkie George, and Goes is the Goes. And most of all, we always want to thank you, that if not for you guys, we just would not be lucky enough to do a show like this. So thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. And for those of you that follow us on social media, thank you again for the support. It means the world to us. We just keep chugging along and knocking these shows out. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week for the coverage on this UFC on ESPN Plus card. That's the big one this weekend. ONE Championship does have an all-female offering. They have an atomweight Grand Prix, and they have a title fight at the top in the strawweight division. We caught up with a couple of those fighters. You can check those recaps on MMA Junkie, as well as full interviews at youtube.com/MMA Junkie video. With that, we're out of here. Have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion.